Hey there, chummers, and welcome back to the Hard Knock Sorority Show, a Shadowrun 4th edition actual play featuring myself, Paul as the GM, and Veronica as Cecile, aka College Girl, and Kat as Deandra. This is the second part of the last episode where Valerie and Beth said goodnight early. We kept playing since Cecile wanted to go have a talk with Kaylee and see if the ladies at the Samovar could help her learn a spell. Deandra, meanwhile, went and confronted her fan club and got invited to the clubhouse. Enjoy this quiet episode of exposition and damage control. Also, I'm going to start you off with an intro for the other Hard Knock sorority, the Resting Glitch Face show. I love this show, and if you haven't yet, please check them out.
2081 has been a hell of a year for St. Louis, Missouri. An astral anomaly left a 2-mile radius around downtown a toxic hellscape, and the residents have been left to pick up the pieces, but the hits just keep on coming. At the center of it all are the Glitches, a Shadowrunning team made up of Bianca the Face, aka Eris, Val the Technomancer, aka Binary, Joe the Muscle, aka Collateral, and Jet the Sneak Thief, aka, well, Jet. Some of us are better than others at sticking to a code name. The girls attempt to navigate the criminal elements of the St. Louis streets, all while looking out for themselves, each other, and the people they love.
If you want more of the Glitches, feel free to drop into the Gamers Table Discord or check us out on the socials at Resting Glitch Face. You can find us on all major podcatchers or check out our Patreon. Thanks for listening.
I think Deandra is going to disguise everything but her eyes, and okay. Then run a, if she has an alternate sin. She probably doesn't. But I mean, like, as long as she's not being pulled over, a sin shouldn't do much, or shouldn't.
Is she going to go get her bike, or is she just going to take a taxi?
I think she might try to go get her bike, but after. So she's going to take a taxi first.
All right. You take the taxi into Tacoma, and out in front of Olga's tea house, you see several of the of your fan club standing around. There are two young women and a man who are extravagantly dressed in what could best be described as sort of Ren Faire garb, with rapiers and fake pointy ears and makeup that resembles your own. You can see that the level of detail and the quality of the costumes is improving. So somebody has been working on making the appearance more realistic and in some ways even more glamorous than your own. They're sort of lounging outside of Olga's tea house talking, and when you get out, they glance briefly at you and then glance away. Were you trying to keep them from recognizing you, or did you want them to
recognize? Deandre probably did it in such a way where her, like, facial structure has changed, but, like, her eyes are still that, like, the same that they usually look like. She didn't disguise her eyes, and she still has her sword.
Okay.
So it's probably more like she changed outfits and
Yeah, they gave you a quick glance and didn't really, you know, since they didn't obviously recognize you, they've gone back to talking amongst each other.
I think Deandre just walks directly up to them and is like, so you guys loitering now?
They stop talking and look at you startled, and then you see the recognition dawning on their face, and the young man blushes deeply, and he says, no, we were waiting for you.
I think Deandre just, like, gives them a flat look and is like, I'm a wanted criminal now, so... Or, like, she didn't say that. She says, well, there are people looking for me, so do you want a pastry? And then turns and walks into Olga, giving them, like, a follow-me kind of wave.
They follow you in there. And there are a couple of other ones sitting. There are two tables that have fan club members sitting there. And then you see another table where there are two people sitting who you think are probably some kind of organized crime element. Looks like probably Russian mob.
I think Deandre just, like, straight up ignores them and walks up to the counter and gets her a cup of tea and Elvish pastry if they have the ones she likes.
Yeah, the young orc woman behind the counter gets your order, and as she's handing it to you, she says in a very low voice, she says, Miss Olga's going to want to have a word with you.
Well, I can come up to her if she would like, or she can deign to come up to me.
I think you should probably go up.
Well, hold on to these for me. And then she turns around to the folks and then, like, shut up, sit down, I'll be back. And then she turns and walks into the upstairs part.
They do exactly as you say. You go up the stairs, and as you're going up the stairs, you feel the gaze of the two men who you think are probably some kind of are affiliated with the Russian mob following you. Upstairs, the decor changes somewhat radically from the quaint Russian tea house style. Here the walls are covered in red velvet tapestries, and there are mirrors on the walls, and the lights are dim and reddish in hue. There's a long corridor, and then you see another stair going up. There are most of the doors here in the corridor are closed. Some of them are open, though, and in the open doorways you see women of various meta types and ages standing in relatively scantily clad. And as you come up, they're sort of looking at you and going through various poses as if to attract your attention.
I think Deandre is not paying very much attention to them, and, like, she's probably, like, not turned around, but has started, like, talking at the two people following her. Like, Sele, so what brings you to this part of the,
Oh, they didn't. They didn't follow you. You just noticed they were still sitting there, but they know you. You basically noticed that they were watching you go upstairs.
Yeah. Well, Deandre is. She doesn't know where she's going, but she knows where she's not supposed to be at the moment. If that makes sense.
And there's a off to your left. There's a sort of a sitting area. There are several women sitting around there, and one of them is Olga, the proprietress of Olga's Tea House. And Olga is obvious, as I've described before, a massive troll woman who has a face like a hatchet. And as you come up the stairs, she waves you over to her waves you towards a seat next to her.
Deandre gives, like, a slight bow and sits down.
She greets you in broken breathial, in that voice of hers that's like boulders rolling down a hill, and she says, in broken Spirethiel, she says,
yes, so thank you for coming up and seeing Olga in her abode. How have you been faring, my friend?
Days of change are upon us, I would say, or upon myself, in a certain sense.
Indeed. I almost didn't recognize you as you came through the door.
Oh, this silly thing? It's a trick I picked up in the liberation.
My friend, it pains me to ask this, as I respect you and the legacy of your father here. However, your acolytes are causing some problems for my business.
I understand. I will...
attracting some undue attention, and I fear that they may come to some harm.
That's very reasonable of you. Thank you very much. I had planned to come here today to attempt to keep them out of trouble.
I see. I appreciate that. You know that you remain welcome here. It's... you are very different than they are, so...
She laughs, and it's a disturbing sound. But you can tell that she's laughing. And she places a very large troll hand on your right shoulder and shakes you a little bit in the mirth and of that she's experiencing comparing you to them.
Very well, then.
Yeah, I think Deandre probably, like, she wouldn't, like, flinch. But having, like, a big hand on her shoulder is probably, like, a... since her father was a troll as well, she probably, like, has felt this small before, I guess you could say, and is, like, still without a beat laughing along with her.
You may be surprised to know, but your father's memory is still known here.
I think Deandre might cry at that. Like, that means a lot to her.
You didn't, like, know that I recognized you, did you?
I think Deandre changes, like, the honorific she starts referring to Olgat in now. I think she goes from, like, matron, the, like, matron honorific in Sperethiel to, like, a familial honorific, like, auntie or something.
She looks at you sort of out of the side of her eye, and then she says,
"You don't remember me, do you?"
"No.
I was but a child when you left."
"I was but a child then as well."
"You were much older than I was already. Anyways, those were different times."
"I remember them."
"They were different times, but unfortunately not much has changed, has it, in this city of ours?"
"Not in the slightest."
"All has changed, though. I've made my own way, as have you. I have a feeling that you will be here long after Olga's gone, too."
"It seems unfortunate to have so many paths while I live on."
"The way of the sixth world. We cannot choose our destinies here."
She looks around at the other women.
"Can we, my little birds?"
And the women sort of smile nervously and or ingratiatingly at Olga.
"Some days I think perhaps if I had just accepted my place on the wheel, then I would have been happy. But others, I relish the opportunity it has given me."
"Yes. What ifs don't exist, only what is, right?"
"And what
well,
will be?"
"Now, you may stop back any time. As I said, you are always welcome here. However, please chase these children out from down below before something bad happens."
"I will. Thank you, Auntie, for seeing and for giving me the pleasure of allowing me to come to you this time." And Deandre stands up and gives a much deeper, much more formal bow, and then says her goodbyes.
Olga responds with a sort of a nod of her head, a bow of her head. She's too large to really do more. You think you might remember who she is. There were a lot of kids that used to hang around.
And probably Deandre as, like, a young teen, young to late teen, like, had to take care of them, especially in, like, the space they were living in. So Deandre's probably seen a lot of troll and elf kids.
Yep, and so you imagine Olga was probably one of those kids. Maybe a little bit surprising that she recognized you, but also maybe not. I mean, the Deandre's glamour is a thing.
Fairly recognizable.
Downstairs, the fan club kids are waiting, as you come down, one of the boys gets up and offers you his seat.
I think Deandre says, "Sit down," and, like, drags another chair over from a different table.
He does so hesitantly, and then the orc waitress behind the counter brings you your coffee and your pastries.
Deandre would know the waitress's name, so she says, like, "Thank you," the waitress's name.
Yeah, just what's her name? What's her name?
Sele. It's a dumb name, but Sele. And then Deandre turns to the fan club and is like, "Is this the only place you guys hang out? Do you just wait here for me every day?"
"No, he sort of stammers. We have a roster, and people, you know, we get to choose, and the higher rank we are, the more we get our choice of roster and when we can come be here to wait for you. It's an honor."
"That's dumb as hell."
"I'm
sorry.
We have a clubhouse. Do you want to meet us there?"
"Where is it?"
He bows deeply and I forget, did you ever introduce yourself by name to them?
I told them my name was The Stars Reflecting.
Oh, right. And so he bows deeply to you, and he, as he says, do you want to meet us there? And he uses the name, you know, The Stars Reflecting, in sort of a really bastardized Sporethiel.
Okay. Yeah. That would probably
be
a better idea.
It would be an honor for us to host you. Well, it's the most magical place.
There's no time for the present. Everybody pack up your stuff. And Deandre, like, gets up and moves the chair back and goes and leaves a big tip for the waitress.
There's a huge... They all, as you say that and get up, they all start looking at each other and chattering and excitedly, like, this is it. The celebrity is coming to visit the clubhouse. People are on their comm link telling everybody, come to the clubhouse. The Stars Reflecting is coming. And they make a big show of calling a luxury grid guide and several other grid guides and opening the door for you and, you know, letting you climb in and all that kind of stuff.
I think she's very like, just come on. She's kind of done with us, to be honest.
The little convoy of grid guides heads out, and you find to your surprise that the what they call the clubhouse is actually in Bellevue. So you travel through Auburn to Bellevue. The vehicles are. Bellevue, as you know, is the really upscale area of Seattle. From a residential neighborhood style, it's comparable to sort of the luxury, the pomp and opulence of downtown Seattle, but in a residential neighborhood. Very high security, constant night errant and other private security patrols, lots of luxury villas and condos and apartment buildings and things like that. Very upscale shopping districts. And the clubhouse itself is one of the additional buildings on a large villa's estate. And one of the young fan clubs says, sort of blushing, somewhat embarrassed, that explains to you that it's his father's property, and that this was sort of the recreational building where they had their games, and there's the pool and stuff, but he's sort of taken it over and they've turned it into the clubhouse, you know, into sort of this fan club for you. And as you go in, it's more opulence and wealth than you've seen probably anywhere. The house, the building that's the clubhouse, supposedly just like a rec room, that what he calls the rec room, it, you know, would house several families in Tereslar.
I mean, Deandre was like a mid to high level cop in Kerasir, so she's probably seen something similar, but like, this is like a once a decade thing for her, not like a once in a lifetime.
Yeah. And there, you know, you picked up probably 8 or 10 of these kids from Olga's, and several more have arrived, and there are several there. There's a pool. And the interior of the clubhouse has been done up in sort of a faux elven architectural style with, you know, high arches and very thin ornamental filigree supporting everything. And there are plants growing all over everything and carvings in Sporethiel. No expense has been spared to make this sort of a trid show version of what normies consider to be elven architecture, complete with background music playing. And, you know, you don't see it probably, but like AR, all sorts of AR effects that you're not seeing, magical effects and things like that, birds flying around.
I think Deandre, like, she's very trying very hard not to outwardly react, but she gives like the very smallest like shake of her head and then realize this is like, they've put work into this. I shouldn't disparage them for that.
And they're sort of guiding you, ushering you in like royalty, like parting ways and in front of you and following you in like this procession. Like, they're super proud of this. And the young man, basically, there's a big table and he pulls out a chair for you again and says, Miss Stars Reflecting, can I get you any kind of libations?
No, thank you.
It's such an honor. And he says, would you be willing to, may I introduce everyone?
Sure.
So The next 10 to 15 minutes is spent basically getting personally introduced to each of these people.
I think this is something that Deandre is like suffering through. They've
sat you down there like the king or the pope, and one by one they're leading them up to you and introducing them by name.
I think like once or twice Deandre has gotten tired of sitting and like stood up to meet them, and like then she realizes and like sits back down.
And every time you stand up to meet them, you can tell that there's like this undercurrent of like talking and like people looking around like, what does it mean? Why did she stand up for that person? So finally you've been introduced to everybody, and now they just seem to be standing around waiting with bated breath for your next.
I think Deandre like thinks for a second, and then is like, ugh, sorry, and like peels the like skin off of her face, and it like goes from like the like pearly white elf skin to like used to. She like wipes it off of her hands. That stuff's uncomfortable.
The young man comes up and kneels in front of you and offers you his rapier. And he said, if you have enemies, my sword is yours to command.
I don't want to get a bunch of kids killed fighting my enemies. I'm sorry.
I can't help but starting to laugh. Okay.
So, you guys can't loiter outside of Olga's. You can't.
They look around at each other and he says, are you commanding us to remain clear of Olga's?
I think Deandre just like... she's like so tired of this at this point. She's just gonna paint her like officer facing the troops on and like stands up to attention and yells at them. Not like yells at them, like training sergeant yells at them for like a solid second. And then she's like, Olga does not want the attention that all of you bring. So only two people are allowed in Olga's at once. And I'll teach Spirithel or fencing on Fridays.
On Fridays here?
Where else?
Everybody's cheering and is quite happy by this generous proposal.
I know Ilios, but I should know how to speak the language well. I'm not an Olympic athlete or anything, but damn well at least be sure to protect yourself on the streets with a sword if you're going to carry one around. Times are changing too, at least at the moment. I'd ask you to avoid the plastic points, but I know I've already said that and you're not going to do it.
Of them blush, and then you realize that the young man, the boy who's offered you the sword, whose place this is, yeah, those aren't actually fake ears he's wearing. He's had his ears done up.
I think Deandre like looks at them and kind of cringes for a second. Like,
this is what you get for running around with charisma 6.
Yeah, it is. I deserve this. And also with a glamour that charms people, technically.
Yes.
Well, anyways, I've got a lot of hiding from the government to do. So, I guess you have. I need to use a bathroom to reapply. Can I borrow one?
Yes, of course. And two of the girls come up and lead you to the facilities, which are astonishing.
I think Deandre pulls out this like green, like florally green paint. And like just slathers it on her face, and then slowly it becomes that like pearlescent elf white.
Yep, you probably have to pull out your comlink and sort of, you're seeing on your comlink screen, you're seeing sort of like a TikTok filter that you can adjust with some sliders and stuff, and it adjusts on your face until you get exactly the look you want.
I think she spends like 5 minutes looking for Craxton in the mirror.
The two girls are like trying to help you and like making recommendations and suggestions.
Like I'm using spy tech basically, and they're like, oh, makeup.
Yeah, exactly.
And then I think Deandre goes like, before she's about to walk out, and she's like, oh, and turns to the group and she's like, does anyone want to pick up my bike?
Yeah, you immediately have a dozen volunteers all vying for your attention.
Deandre finds the one that looks the least like the one you'd like pass over in the group looking for them, the one that's right. Like the least audacious almost.
Yep, you find one of the younger girls in the group who's sort of holding back and sort of tentatively raising her hand. Seems like she's got the least high quality clothes and fake ears on. She's also not wearing a rapier.
Deandre just like points at her and goes, here, follow me out after And also, pick up a hobby, please.
Rapier. Oh, different hobby?
Like, learn to bake or find some plants you like, something.
Oh, God. Now you've started it. Next time you come back, there are going to be cookies everywhere.
Bread. Traditional elf recipes.
Yeah, Lembas.
Elishon.
All right.
I think, like, once Deandre is, like, away from the rest of them, she's like, okay. She's like, it hands the girl her keys and is like, please don't crash my bike.
She nods at you and she says, I'm a good rider. Don't worry.
Your comlink number.
She swipes you her code.
I'm trusting you with my home address. Please don't tell anyone else.
I won't. Anything you say.
Oh, she pulls out, like, the key card to her apartment. You water my plants. Well, please do. And, here's 2,000 yen for doing it.
She refuses to take the yen. She says, I don't need the money. This is honor enough.
Didn't you also ask Kirsten to water your plants?
I did. My plants need to be watered.
That's going to be the funniest scene we're never going to see.
Kirsten and this girl showing up at the same time.
The stars reflecting asked me to look and water her plants for her.
The what?
The future is Deirdre giving her fan club errands to do for her. Do my dry cleaning.
Hey, Paul, on Kat's behalf, could I make a suggestion?
Of course.
Is the fan club now big enough that it technically counts as a group contact for Deandre?
Oh, absolutely.
Here, let me put it on my social.
There's at least 20 people in the group.
They have dues? Oh my god, I am now extremely invested in the politics of this group.
What's the loyalty and connection of the fan club? Or do group contacts work differently?
It's gotta be loyalty 6 connection 1.
Yeah, they would probably die for being there. I mean, it's almost scary.
It is scary.
You don't want to know what just crossed my mind.
Oh, please, enlighten us.
You don't want to know.
I would love to know.
You'll
please.
Think I'm evil.
Please, tell me.
Okay. Have a bunch of young, impressionable people willing to take up arms and die for you. And you also have a bunch of Nazi cops who are trying to push out metas.
Oh, God.
They want recognition from you and metahumans, and they want to feel closer to an elven community.
That's the worst idea that's ever come out of your mouth.
Okay, I'm just saying, you have two problems, and you could make it into one solution.
Deandre does not want to get these kids killed.
I'm not saying she does, and I'm not saying that I want that to happen. I'm just saying that on a mathematical level.
Deandre's number one priority is to keep these kids out of trouble.
Like, I'm just saying, if you really wanted, you could even probably double or triple their ranks, too.
They live in Bellevue. They probably have some connections. How you want to use that?
Okay, but they're also really cringe.
As a group, they are very cringe.
Like, but Paul, they might be able to give you access to things or people.
I think this is going to sound cruel, but I kind of like the idea that by becoming enamored with Deandre and, like, joining this group, they become so cringe that, like, their former contacts, like, push them away.
Joining the fan club reduces
their former contacts for sure. Their parents, what I mean is they can probably still give you access, like, oh, my parents are having a party. I can get you in.
That's fair. I'm just saying I love the idea that they're so cringe. Everyone's like, you used to be cool, but I'm like...
No, 100%.
If one of them were to invite Dear, she would ask to Cecile to come with her. I think that's like... She'd probably go, unless there
like
was
you
talk,
guys
but...
have. I know Cecile's been talking about, or Cecile, Veronica's been talking about having Cecile go to a party. Like this, like let's say you want to get in touch with or get close to a political figure or any kind of high-ranking figure in society. These kids could probably do... Or could get you in as catering.
I think that's like the most Dean Dare is willing to do for these to make these kids do for her, other than like go pick up my bike, please.
Which they are entirely happy to do.
There's something extremely funny about the disconnect between how much they adore Dean Dare and how completely like disinterested and annoyed she is with them.
That's part of Dean Dare's charm.
I know. It's just. It's so funny because it reminds me of, like, real-life fan clubs when they interact with like, a celebrity.
Yeah.
Which is really sad, but really, really funny.
I'm actually shocked that Deander has interacted with them now to the level that she has.
Oh.
Offering fencing lessons?
Her one desire is for these kids to stay out of trouble. And if getting them all in one place on a Friday gets them out of trouble, she'll do that.
Okay, that is fair. They were potentially going to get kicked out of, like, a mob front. They do clearly need some kind of protection.
Yeah.
When the mob says leave,
I think they were going to get kicked out. I think they were going to get trafficked.
Probably. Yeah, no, like,
I mean,
it's...
You were upstairs in Olga's. You saw what was going on up there.
Yeah.
Oh no. Oh no.
I mean,
I'm now just imagining that happened and they just keep doing it.
I mean, Olga was probably tempted and then was like, yeah, for old time's sake, I'm going to let Deander take care of this.
I'm going to give a warning.
No. I mean, like, they get trafficked and then they keep up with the cringy stuff like 24/7 anyway.
Geez.
I was like, oh, ooh, they would. They would.
Like, screaming and crying when they lose their plastic points.
Beg and beg Olga. Like, please put me in more debt so I can have elf ears.
Yeah, that's the problem when you make something like this your entire personality.
It's kind of the problem when you make anything your whole personality.
Yeah.
Or at least this wholeheartedly.
Yep.
Ooh. So, are you going to be going, Paul? Or do you still have time for stuff?
Sure, what do you want to do?
I was going to talk to Kaylee and also maybe possibly Nadia or Talia.
I would, okay. How are you going to go about that?
Well, Kirsten did say that Cecile isn't, like, on a watch list or anything. So, I'm going to say Cecile just, like, honestly, she takes public transit.
The bus.
Not a bus. A train.
The metro.
The monorail?
A monorail is just pretentious enough for Cecile.
I don't think anything but the Seattle monorail would still exist. I think that it would just be the continued evolution of car-centered culture in America, because it carries the corpse.
The monorail still exists. It's canon.
Yeah.
The funny thing is, Shadowrun is better than current America because Seattle's like, well, we do actually need public transit that isn't privatized, so, like, yes, monorail.
The monorail. It's like the episode of The Simpsons. The monorail.
Which is really funny, because if Shadowrun was more dystopian, I could totally imagine just all public transit being privatized. Like England, but even worse.
Yep.
I know, it's hard to imagine.
Alright, so... Are you going during the day? Are you calling ahead?
Hold on. I need to...
Do you actually know where Samovar is?
Of course she knows where Samovar is.
She's just been driven there.
Okay, but yes, her comlink does still have GPS and location tracking.
Okay, fair enough.
Like, even if she didn't know, she could just be like, hey, comlink, where was I at this time?
Oh my god. That's such a security risk.
It is a security risk, but if you never get hacked, there's no risk. You gotta think like the 2070s, old man.
What if you lose control of your comlink? Physical control.
Don't do that.
Uh-huh.
Never make a mistake. Don't be unlucky. Pull yourself up by your bootstraps.
In your comlink so that you could blow it up whenever you want.
I mean, that is an option. I'm pretty sure it's in Spy Games, actually.
It is. I think.
Yes, it is. I know. I briefly considered putting the option for the jet propulsion on the comlink, but I was like, no, it can be wrist mounted or it can fly. Not both. One or the other. Okay. Yeah. So she's gonna go in through the back. She has learned her lesson begrudgingly. She's gonna go, yes, I've seen the yellow sign, whatever. Let me in.
So she's gonna go around the back.
Mm-hmm. And say that exact phrase, presumably to the guard's confusion.
Yeah, the security people are standing around there. They're not really standing. There are several security personnel, or they're not really security personnel. They're just people standing there who are obviously there for security. And as you approach, they sort of block your path. And one of them, the leader of them, a rather tall and athletic woman, looks at you and says, "Can I help you?"
"Is this sign yours?" And she shows the sign.
"Ah, one moment, please." And then she says, "Very well. Go on in."
"Thank you."
You go through the same routine you always do. The doors open and you go through the hallway, through the airlock. What time is it?
I'm going to say like 12:30. No, 12:45.
PM?
Yes. She's not going at midnight. That's too rude.
All right. As you go through the airlock and into the club is shut down at the moment. There are a couple of people moving around, cleaning up, and there's, you know, somebody behind the bar cleaning up. And then as you come through the curtain, you see Nadja walking towards you from the area where you know the entrance is, or the exit from the club into the private areas of the building. And She looks at, she's coming towards you, and she's got a smile on her face, a very slight smile. And her clothes today are a little bit less odd than what she normally wears. Less archaic, more utilitarian. And she says, "Ah, hello, Cecile.
Well,
are you here to say Kaylee today?"
"I am. And possibly, was Nadja the one that was weird to Cecile?"
"No, that was Talia."
"Okay. Yes, Kaylee. And also, possibly Talia?"
"Okay. I will see if I will take you to Kaylee. And I will go to see if Talia is in it."
"Ah, thank you."
She leads you up in through the residential areas that you've been in before, where you stayed before, and up another level. And as you enter this second level, this is more, you realize more of the private residence part of the building. You get the distinct hint or flavor of this is probably where Prokop actually lives when he's here. The decor is distinctly Eastern European in flavor and design. And she leads you through to a room that is, as she opens the door, you feel a ward opening for you. And as you enter into the room, it's a very bare room. There's not any real furniture in it. At the center of the room is a bed, and at the side of the bed is a chair. The atmosphere in the room, though, unless you're going to do any kind of astral perception, you felt the barrier as you walk through it. But other than that, you're not seeing anything. There's a very dim light on, and in the bed is Kaylee's lying in the bed. She's got an IV and several machines hooked up to her, but she's sitting up and awake and alert.
"Ah, Kaylee, here you are."
She smiles weakly at you and she says, "Cecile, right?"
Yes, that is me indeed."
The door shuts behind you. Nadja's obviously gone off to look for Talia. And Kaylee says, "Why don't you have a seat here?"
"Indeed. I wouldn't blame you at all if you forgot my name, though."
"It's been a very busy couple of days, hasn't it?"
Quite. "I came to profusely apologize."
"Oh, what? What for?"
"For one, getting you into this?"
"Getting me into this? I don't think that you're responsible for this, Cecile. From what I understand, what Prokop's told me, that the two things are probably unrelated."
"Even still, you wouldn't have been at Hazel's at that time if it weren't for me."
"You don't know that. I quite enjoy Hazel's. I go there quite frequently. I might just as well have been there. In fact, if you guys hadn't come and visited me, I might have already been there when the bomb went off. In fact, you may have saved my life.
Somehow I doubt that.
Well, we can't know. In any case, what brings you here today?
Well, I suppose I wanted to ask if you got that file.
Which file are we talking about?
The one retrieved just 2 days ago?
Well, I don't have it. I think Prokop's got it.
He didn't give it to you?
No, he's keeping it safe. I mean, she sort of motions at the bed. I mean, what's he supposed to do? Give me a memory stick to hold on to?
I simply assumed he had told you what was on it.
Oh, yes. No, he did. He's made an attempt to dissuade me from following through on the plan that you and I had agreed to. He really does not want me to go public. He thinks it's much safer for me to continue to just be Kaylee the street doc in downtown Auburn.
Unfortunately, I must agree with him at this time. I mean, I don't have any quarrel with Diane, and, well, Colonel Petrov apparently had nothing to do with you being left in the Barrens, so...
Yeah, it's strange, isn't it?
It's certainly perplexing.
My father was never actually even given the opportunity to accept me as I am. She took that from him, just as she did from me.
Indeed, I can't
If you were
imagine.
In my place, wouldn't you want, well, to take revenge, maybe?
On Diane?
Yes, my mother.
You know, I recall Prokop saying that revenge is... I don't recall what he said. Something about it being a dangerous road?
Yeah, he said similar things to me.
In any case, I don't, I think revenge has its place, but some things you cannot repay in kind.
Yes, that's true. I guess there's no way I'll ever be able to make her... Well, I'm confused, to be honest. There's the desire for revenge, and then there's also, I understand what you're saying, I understand what Prokop's saying. You know, he said that if she hadn't done what she had done, I would never have become a doctor, I would never have had the opportunity to help people the way I do, I'd probably be living in a mansion somewhere completely useless.
That's not entirely true, Kaylee. You might still be a doctor, just a rich one.
Look at how much good my mother and my father are doing. What are they doing for the world?
Well, your father tried to have me killed.
Ah. Is that why you're so interested in him?
Well, I can understand him trying to have me killed, but he did also get me, removed from my academic program, and that I cannot tolerate.
She chuckles. At least you have your priorities straight.
Yes, actually, a little while ago, rather funny, I tried to get, Diane to get rid of him, honestly. Not kill, but divorce.
She snorts and she says, yeah, I never really, I mean, I've been following them, obviously, since I know who they are, but I don't understand the relationship at all.
If I surmise correctly, they may not have one at all. For all I know, it's one of those, HR marriages that get set up within a company.
It's possible.
She hangs out a lot.
Financially speaking, socially and financially speaking, one would say that he married above his station.
Really?
She looks at you in surprise and says, you didn't know? I would have thought that you would have done your homework there.
I've been trying, but in between Prokop sending me to go places and be shot at, it's been difficult.
I see. Well, you might want to look into that.
Indeed. In any case, I suppose I should tell you that I don't feel large animosity towards Kirill Petrov. In any case, I can't use what happened to you against him. Not unless I lied, anyway.
Well, Prokop tells me that you've already set other things in motion against him.
That is perhaps broadly true. He is, he has perhaps drawn the ire of people much more powerful than him.
Right. Well, he was always more of, I think, I don't know very well, obviously, but I do think that if you look into Diana Petrov, you'll see that he married above his station and that she's probably the one, she coughs, she's probably the one pulling the strings.
I had my suspicions of that after I read that file, but, I suppose, I simply mean to ask, do you want any help with Kirill Petrov?
Help? In what way? What were you thinking?
Well, he doesn't know you exist.
It's true, and I'm still debating whether we should follow through on our plan.
Well, what I had considered was, it is, of course, not up to me, but I am willing to put aside my differences with him and perhaps reach out on your behalf, if you would like me to.
That would certainly drive a wedge between him and Diana, wouldn't it?
Indeed it would. I must admit that I also stand to gain from that, but, well...
I think one thing that would be important to know is whether he feels towards orcs the way my mother did.
That is... I suppose you can never truly know that about someone.
In any case, well, I don't know.
I figured I should offer since, well, I feel like I owe you, and it's apparent that Prokop is perhaps not going to be pleased by the notion.
No, it's unlikely.
However,
he's very protective.
I do not care what Prokop thinks.
No, but I definitely value his advice in this case.
Mm-hmm.
For Prokop, Prokop has a lot of respect for the path that I've chosen. Taking care of the poor and underserved. That's something that lies near and dear to his heart. And then he also dotes on me since he adopted me from the Barons. So if I take the path of revealing myself, his concern is more of a parental nature, to be honest.
I simply felt it would be wise to ask since, well, Mr. Petrov never got the opportunity to react in any way, right? We can hardly hold any of this against him, and it's just as unfair to him as it is to you, no?
No, absolutely. You're completely right about that, Cecile. But if we tell my father, then I think a lot of other things become revealed. All of the effort to secure that file and all of Prokop's efforts to protect me become negated.
Is he not protecting you from Diane?
No, he is, but I mean, having the file and the threat of releasing it, should she think of it? If she finds out that I exist, she will want me dead. She will want me dead before I can go. If the file exists, then even if I die, somebody can release that file and damage her. So we can use it as leverage. That was Prokop's thinking.
That's fair, but is it fair to keep him in the dark?
I'm somewhat ambivalent, I'm afraid, about him, Cecile.
I simply meant it as something to consider. I don't wish to influence your thought process. I simply wondered. But I have found that the truth is just as good a weapon as a lie.
I would say let's hold that weapon in reserve. We can always use that one, right?
Always is temperamental.
I guess what I'm saying is, let's see if there becomes a more opportune moment, a more targeted application of that information. I haven't completely made up my mind yet whether I want to go public or not.
Well, right now, you definitely can't. You've been labeled a terrorist, and, well, I'd have to spend a lot of time diffusing that narrative before you can really say anything.
Exactly.
Well, then.
And all of this information and going to Kirill may be part of diffusing that or deflecting it.
I suppose it would be much easier if Diane did actually get rid of him, huh?
Yes. If they fell out, then it may be more advantageous to go to him, to turn him against her.
Well, in any case, that's all I really had to say. Let me know if I can do anything for you.
Well, I would appreciate it if you would find out more about the situation and find out where we would best use the information that we now have.
Prokop told
me that he feels like he has information potentially that links Diana to the things that are happening in Auburn, my neighborhood, my home, the people that I serve. That's what I'm interested in right now.
Well, it's very obvious she has something planned for Auburn. I'll also work on finding out who the hell bombed you.
I would appreciate that.
I already pulled all of the footage from the explosion before they managed to edit it.
There's a piece of shrapnel that was removed from my spine. Prokop has it. It may be of use.
Is there? I shall ask him about it.
All right, well, we'll
stay. Take care, Kaylee.
Yes, stay in touch. Let me know how it goes, and be careful.
Cecile bows and leaves. Well, I suppose I should say Cecile curtsies, or like.
Okay. You can see that Kaylee's starting to drift off to sleep again. Outside of the door, Nadia's waiting for you.
Hello, Nadia.
Did you have a good chat with Kaylee? With the good doctor?
As all things is relative. Although I may need to speak to Prokop about something at some point.
Ah, yes. The man of the house.
Not right now. It can wait.
Yes, well, he's not here at the moment anyway, so... Why don't I take you to Talia? She's in the library. She's waiting for you.
You have a library?
Of course we have a library. The library is up in the this private area of the building, and it's exactly what you would imagine it to be. Tall ceilings with floor-to-ceiling bookshelves. A very quiet ambiance. There are no external windows or external sources of light. Thick carpets on the floor. At the center of the room is a what appears to be a real tiger skin, and there's a small table there with some refreshments, the standard samovar teapot and some pastries, and Talia is sitting in a chair, a tall back chair, reading in a book as you enter. Unlike Nadia, who's wearing more of a utilitarian day-to-day kind of outfit today, Talia is, as usual, wearing an immaculate and highly fashionable dress made of, it appears to be made of a very soft, buttery textured white leather, cream-colored leather. And as she stands up, you see that there is a very fine pattern embossed in it with sort of a green metallic material. She gets up as you enter, closes the book and puts it down on the chair and walks towards you. Hello, Cecilia. How are you today?
Hello, Talia. And might I say I love that fabric.
It is divine, isn't it?
Looks terribly expensive.
Please, have a seat.
I got the impression you had something you wished to say to me?
No. I was curious, but my curiosity has been resolved.
That is good to hear, I suppose.
She smiles. I don't mean to be mysterious, but it was really nothing.
In that case, I must ask you for a favor.
Sure. Would you like a pastry and some tea?
Oh, I don't think I could today.
Suit yourself.
I went shopping recently, and a shopkeeper was reluctant to sell me a formula that I happened to need.
Okay.
I suppose it could be best compared to puppetry?
Ah, is it sort of in the influence category of spells that you're looking for?
Oh, I suppose, but I'd rather not seize control of people entirely. Just their long parts.
Chuckles. Well, I have to admit, I too am reluctant. Would be reluctant. These kinds of spells are not, they're not for everybody.
Mm-hmm. In the sense that they are unpalatable, or that they are tough to learn?
In the sense that one does not want children running around with nuclear weapons.
I understand your caution. However, if I am to continue being shot at, perhaps I would like to control the arms of those shooting at me.
Fair enough. That makes sense to me.
It's certainly more humane than what some people do. Can you believe, when I was kidnapped, their mage, a DeVry, tried to probe my mind?
Alice DeVry.
Indeed. The very same.
She looks at you coolly and then she says, if you're not careful, Cecile, you're going to be on the same path that led her to where she's at.
You're being cryptic once again.
Do you not have the attention of powerful people?
You perhaps know more than I assumed you did.
You forget that Kirsten was there. You forget that we know we've been following your career for the last month or so.
Did Kirsten blab about that?
I wouldn't say blab.
Mystery upon mystery.
It's not really anything we're concerned about or following. I'm just simply pointing out to you that Alice DeVry was at one time also a mage in the corporate structure, a student, if you will, who incrementally and gradually relinquished her empathy and humanity to become what she is now.
I am not so naive as to believe that those greater powers have my best interest at heart. But if it's mutually beneficial, how can I say no?
Exactly. That's how it happens. That's how it works. Small steps, small tasks, small missions.
You make them sound like one of those urban legends.
Now it's you who are speaking cryptically, but I assure you that's how it started for Alice.
Ah, no. I speak plainly. Have you not heard those legends of the small creatures which promise travelers good fortune in exchange for small favors that slowly grow over time?
Exactly.
Luckily for me, I've never believed in folk tales.
She looks at you. Make a judge intentions test, or something similar.
Two.
Are you... You've got a wound modifier on that.
Yep. Although, it has been 2 days.
That was... Was it stun or was it physical?
Stun.
All right. So you've slept at least once.
I'll just roll 2 dice. It didn't matter.
All right. 2 hits. She gives you a glance when you say you don't believe in folk tales that gives you a bit of a chill, but she doesn't say anything.
Mm.
Says, very well, then. So you want this spell, some kind of manipulation spell?
Indeed. Of course, I shan't beg, but it would be appreciated.
Well, you know how it works, right? We will generally ask for a favor in return.
I shudder to think what favors you will ask of me.
Smiles slyly.
But if you're curious, I really do my best work with papers by a fireplace, if you're wondering.
Well, if you'll agree to owe us a favor, then we will provide you with the formula. Will you require training?
It certainly sounds like a fun time. Why not? Is that an extra favor?
No.
In that case, I would be honored.
Do you have time now?
I certainly could.
Okay, well, why don't we spend the next couple of hours going over the formula? She smiles at you, showing some teeth, and says, I know it by heart.
And now I understand your caution in giving it to me.
All right, so that's how it goes. You do spend some time with Talia, and in the library, she's very... I mean, it's quite clear to you that she is a practitioner of both skill and power. She does things and teaches you the formula in ways that you hadn't experienced before. She has whenever somebody's really good at something, you know, they have shortcuts that they don't even think about, that they just do automatically. They don't even realize. They take for granted that they know them and take for granted that other people know them too. So as she's teaching it to you, you're learning little tricks and things that sort of optimize the spell for you. And you can tell that she's both a good teacher, she's patient and very thorough, and she knows this formula by heart, and she has considerable magical authority. And once you've mastered the spell to the level that she's comfortable with, she looks at you and says, there you go.
I should say that I do have to roll for this. Pulling up the exact rules.
While we're pulling up rules, what book is WA?
Could you be more specific about what you're looking for?
The blank sway qualities. I want to look at what they do. They're on.
That's somewhere. The book Way of the Adept.
Way of the Adept. Okay, thank you.
I haven't spoken to Paul about it because it's sort of like a big change to how adepts work. I don't
like
know if Paul has read it.
And because I am building an adept, it probably...
Spellcasting plus intuition. Threshold 5, 1 day extended test. Instructors can make an instruction test to add extra dice to the learning test.
All right, sounds good. Let's add some extra dice then.
All right, just tell me how many.
One, two extra dice.
Okay. That's...
Actually, no. Why does the... That's odd. The dice on the table look different than the dice the way they counted up.
So that's 9 dice?
That should be enough, right? What was the threshold again?
5. It's an extended test with a duration of 1 day. She fucking nails it. That's 6 hits.
Yeah. So, like I said, the instruction from Talia is significant, and Cecile realizes that instruction in and of itself was probably worth, you know, quite a bit. If she had tried to go learn this on her own, she'd probably have spent several days learning it.
You know what? Because it's thematically relevant. I have a crossroads here. Look at my spells. You know what? Yeah, I'm going to do it. I'm going to give myself a specialization in manipulation. It was really worth it. Okay, cool. I'm only, like, very scared of Talia instead of, you know, scared shitless. And I think I'll call it there, other than just, like, working in her presumably pretty decent hotel.
Yeah, you're going to be building her a new comlink.
Yeah, I... Listen, okay, I want to run this past you. In the wish list that I have prepped, I added some spy stuff to her comlink that I don't think she would want yet, but will eventually. I just want to check with you that these things are okay to eventually add at some point in something the size of, like, a wristband, more or less.
Yeah, I don't see why they wouldn't be.
Gyroscopic winch.
Ah.
And an harmonic resonator, which will break glass.
Cool. All right.
I tried to keep it pretty slim because I was like, there's only so much stuff that you can really put on a wristband.
Yeah, I mean, if we're talking about a play technology where we've got monofilament wire that can slice through anything and suborbital rocket planes, why not a wrist winch?
A wrist winch with photonic computing. That's not even the funniest thing. There's like really, really stupid options, if I'm being honest. Like, let me scroll. There's a flamethrower with one use. Flashbang, monofilament garrote, nanite slicers, small explosive device, dun gas, cell collector for collecting, like, epithelial cells and shit, armor case, but I figure if it's, like, wrist-mounted, it's not gonna get shot anyway. Yeah, mini flamethrower, and fingerprint scanner. I actually might get fingerprint scanner, because I feel like that can fit.
That could be cool.
That's not that weird.
Do you know what other character in fiction has a wrist-mounted winch?
I don't know who you're going to say, but I feel scared about who it is.
Lupin the Third.
Fuck you!
No, I'm just imagining Cecile, like, using the wrist-mounted winch to climb a building and, like, Lupin shoots past her and, like, goes, nyeh, or something.
Also, it's a winch. It doesn't actually come with any wire or a grapple hook. It explicitly says that those are separate.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to carry the grapple hook and the wire along with you and attach it when you need it.
Yep.
But, like, the grapple hook has a... The grapnel... The... What's it called? The, like, grapple gun has a winch in it.
Yeah, but it's not a comm link. Also, it's a grapple gun.
Yeah.
A comm link, like, you can hide, like, a grapple, like, it can fold together, and you can be like, yeah, this is just my camera tripod. Right? And then you just be like, yeah, I just have some cable here, right? Like, you can get that through airport security, no problem. If you try to board with a bloody grapple gun, they're going to scan your bag, and they're going to be like, why are you bringing this on a plane? What are you doing?
All right, guys. I got to call it a night.
Okay.
This was lovely. Don't forget the recording.
Thanks. Good night, guys.
The Topps Company, Inc. has sole ownership of the names, logo, artwork, marks, photographs, sounds, audio, video, and/or any proprietary material used in connection with the game Shadowrun. The Topps Company, Inc. has granted permission to the Hard Knock Sorority Podcast to use such names, logos, artwork, marks, and/or any proprietary materials for promotional and informational purposes on its website, but does not endorse and is not affiliated with the Hard Knocks Sorority Podcast in any official capacity whatsoever. The music for the Hard Knocks Sorority Podcast was written and performed by Trace Mineral. The Hard Knocks Sorority Podcast is licensed under a Creative Commons License 4.0, meaning you are welcome to use the material as long as you give us credit.
college girl's curiosity, she started it all. Homies feel the danger and darkness, their fate is sealed.